Now it gives me once again great pleasure to introduce our main speaker. But I have to first, we had dinner before, so I just have to let you know that it was just a really fun gallery before with this whole posse coming into the front. And just to let you know that Fresno seems to have like a lot of alcoholics. I was born in Fresno. So. Give a big hand to welcome Jeff.
Yeah. My name is Jeff. I'm an alcoholic. Thankful and grateful to be here. First of all, I'd like to thank Gil and staff for asking me to come out here and share my experience, strength, and hope, see us and Glenn. And that's what we do here. So this program is one alcoholic helping another. And my sobriety birth date is November 15th of 1991. So what I have is I have 30 years, 11 months, and 15 days. I don't have almost 31 years. That's the time that I have. So if you woke up this morning before I did and you had less time than I do, you don't got more time than I do. That's what I was taught here in Alcoholics Anonymous. That you count your time, and you remember it, and you remember that day. That's what my first sponsor taught me. Because that's all you got when you got here, Jeff. You better remember that day. Not in 2 weeks, I'll have 3 months. No. It doesn't work that way. It's where I come from. The way that I was taught. And that's the way I teach the people that I'm blessed to have that are sponsoring. I'm going to thank my people from Fresno that came out with me tonight, and Bob and Cindy from San Diego, and I love Bob, and Bob's like a mentor towards me, a brother, and someone that I love and care for very much. So, you know, and I want to welcome you newcomers. You newcomers are the lifeblood of alcohol phenomena, and the old timers you see here are the heart. And we need you as much as you need us. What I've learned here, AA doesn't need me, I need alcohol. So I got here like some of you, I got here on a court card, back-to-back-to-back DUIs, my last two DUIs were in the same week, and no car insurance, no license, I had really no life, I was just holding on to the next life, to the next thing that I could do to get by one more day. Because I live in past sorrows and better tomorrows, and today is just a good day to drink. So, you know, I got here, and, you know, the judge, they called the nudge from the judge. I got here on a court card. I wasn't planning on staying here. I was here to make the guest appearance. And what I learned here, you know, I got a slippery face, and anywhere I go, it becomes a slippery place. And the strong don't survive here, the powerless do. I'm powerless over people, places, and things, and situations. They taught me you better do the opposite, start thinking the opposite. Better start being grateful for what you have instead of ungrateful for what you don't have. When I got here, I was a very broken man, but I could never admit that. I could never admit what I was. I was the last one to find out I was an alcoholic and put another mind altering chemicals in my body, like I was the last one to find out the things I did the night before because I'm a blackout drinker. And it's been a long, long time since I got that phone call and somebody calling me up saying, hey, do you remember what you said in my life last night? But I remember it, man, because I'm reminded when you newcomers come in and talk about your stories, your experience, and your strength, and your hope. And I lean on these old timers, you know, too. You know, I'm thankful for the people back in Fresno, like Lamont, Woody, Big Charlie, and people that put influences in my life that I never knew it would be. You know, like Paul V, before I got sober, he was my second sponsor for 24 years. Before I got sober, I was playing that game. One foot in, one foot out. Going to the VA hospital, checking in, and thank God at that time, the VA hospital in Fresno had an inpatient program. I was checking in upstairs, but I wasn't checking in downstairs. So they never really had me on record. Playing the game. Didn't know if I was an alcoholic. Maybe I'll wait till my mom's birthday in April and get sober for her birthday. What the heck of a birthday present, right? You know? And so finally, you know, my two buddies that did the intervention with me, first part of the intervention, showed up at the VA hospital and they were standing up on the stairs and said, "What are you guys doing here?" I said, "We're going to go into the meeting." So we go into the meeting and we're sitting there around ourselves and they said, "We're here for him." And Sally Bell, the counselor at the time, kind of looked at it strangely and she said, "Well, what do you mean?" So he's been coming here for 2 or 3 weeks and he hasn't had a bed yet. So she got up and made a phone call and about 10 minutes later, this guy named Tom Ryan walked in. He looked like a red skeleton and he dressed, you know, very colorful. And he said, "Today's your lucky day." And you know what? The first thing that came to my mind was, how about tomorrow? Because I got about 30 things that I need to do, you know, that were more important. You know, everything was more important. I didn't know too much about sobriety. You know, and Paul had called me and he said, "You know what, Jeff? I'm going to ask you a question." And he says, "You got a best friend?" I said, "Yep." "Would you die for your best friend?" At that time, "Yeah, I'd die for my best friend." "Would you lie for your best friend?" "Yeah, I lie for my best friend. I do it all the time." "Would you do this for your best friend?" "Yeah." He says, "Why don't you become your own best friend? Why don't you get sober?" 31 years later, that still is a big part of my recovery, that statement. So, you know, I got sent to the yoga club in prison. And back then, they had smoking. Fistfights broke out in the middle of the meeting. We had the biggest gangsters, prostitutes. We had it all in there, man. It was a mix. I mean, I traveled up and down the state during sobriety sales. There was nothing like the meeting in Fresno, California. On Tulare Street, first in Tulare, the old ass club. So one of my first meetings, I get there, and some guy comes strolling in. It's pretty hot. He's sweating. He comes up and he gives us his court card. And the guy looks at him, crumbles it back up, and throws it at him. And said, "We're not taking your court card." "So I'm only a couple minutes late. I got to catch the bus." He said, "Well, you better catch an earlier bus." I was like, "Oh." So that's just the way things were there. And they told us, "If you didn't want to be here, there's the door. Get the F on out of here and keep drinking. And when you're done, come on back in. And some of us will be here." I needed that tough love. I needed to see things like that. I needed to witness that. And these people, you know, the top of foreign language, what I learned about the language of the heart. I didn't know anything about language of the heart. I didn't know about, you know, we give it away to keep it, we hurt in order to grow, one day at a time. And I've learned here that sometimes it's 1 minute, one heartbeat, one cuss word, one tear, your job at a time, and every sobriety. We just don't drink no matter what. And that's the club I come from. We don't drink no matter what. And you know, I was going to the ODAC club, and you know, I knew I had a court case coming up with my DUI, and so like I said, I was just there to play the game, watching these people. I kind of thought it was kind of comical to watch all these people come in and say the things that they would say and act the way they would act. And, you know, it was like being in a vault, right? And so, you know, there's this guy that was coming in with a suit and tie, and he'd walk in, and I'd think, "Man, not this asshole again." And he would say things that I wouldn't even say when I was drunk, right? He would tell us things, yell at us, and say things, and that asshole became my first sponsor. And he's known as Rotten Ron. And Rotten Ron was as rotten as a cane, but he loved me. And when I walked up to him, because the only reason why I walked up to him and asked him to be my sponsor was, is because their family was the biggest DUI defense attorneys in the state of California. So I knew I'd need them, but just not yet. So I waited and waited, and I knew my court case was coming, and I walked up to him, and I said, "Hey, Ron, you can I get your phone number?" And he looked at me, and at that time, he was about 6'4". At that time, he was like a beast. He was just a big man, big, loud, obnoxious. And he looked at me, and he wrote down a piece of paper, phone number, and he threw it at me, and he goes, "This is the quickest way to get rid of you, because you'll never ever call me." So I called him. I called him, and we formed a relationship to this day. On our way over here, we didn't call him. See, Robin Ron, you know, he forgot one thing at year 10. He forgot one thing he had told me. We don't drink no matter what. no matter what happens, we will turn. So I was at his daughter's wedding, and I was with my girl at the time, and we're sitting there watching him. He was with like three other guys, and one's still around that still came, he's got his time. And they were drinking on duels. So we watch him, he comes over to me, just like that old beer commercial, and he sets it down in front of me and he says, drink it. So I'm not drinking it, but I'm your sponsor. You can go ahead and drink it, I'm giving you permission. I'm not drinking it. Just because you drink it doesn't mean I have to. Because that's what he talks about. So Rob and Ron comes back 10 years later in a wheelchair, sweat burning a little bit, even worse mental capacity. He wasn't thinking straight. And I lost him back, but I gave him his famous turn words to me. He used to tell me, better you than me. And that's what happened to me. I got to be selfish with my own recovery. And I love Ron. And I know Ron loves me. And we called him on the way over here to let Sophie and me be good taste of old school sobriety. And we just said two words and he took off. Right? He was very direct to the point. So, you know, I was going to the ODAC club, and I was still pretty new, and Ron was my sponsor, and they called on me to share, and, you know, and back then, you know, I really didn't want to talk, and he called on me to share, and I said, no thank you, maybe next time. So Rod and Ron walked up behind me and whispered in my ear, and he said, I guarantee you that that was a beer. If that was a crack pipe, you wouldn't be saying, no, thank you, would you? So I suggest you start like participating in your own recovery. So Ron was very direct to the point, but he taught me a lot of things about the program. He taught me how to do things. He taught me about love. He taught me about working the steps. And I remember when I was on my ninth step, and one of my first commandments, was to a gentleman, a friend of mine that's in the program now, his dad had sent me to a car repair shop. And so I went into this car repair shop, and I walked in, and the lady was sitting there and said, you know, my name is such and such, I owe you some money. And she looked at my name, and before that, there weren't computers yet in these offices. There's been handwritten, and I said, you know, I owe you this amount of money. She looks enough to me, sure enough, when you ring, so I started telling the story. So, well, about 7 years ago, I came in here to get my car repaired, and your husband told me to take the car for a test drive. Well, now I'm back. So, as soon as I'm saying that to her, her face turns red, and the other three ladies turn around, and she picks up the phone, and she says, Ron, another Ron, can you come in here, please? And this Ron's even bigger, right? So we're in a small little area, and I said, do you remember this man? He said, no. I said, why don't you go ahead and So by then, you know, I'm already thinking, how do I get out of here? Because he's like 6'5", and he's a big man. And I said, well, sir, my name is Jeff Little. You told me to take my car for a test drive because you were busy, and you threw me the key, and I took the first test drive. And as soon as I'm saying that, his face starts turning bright red, and he starts shaking his head. And I said, you told me to take it for a test drive, and I never came back. And I said, you know, I'm pretty new to sobriety, I'm working my steps, I don't have any money. I'll wash your cars, I'll clean the oil. I'll do whatever you ask me to do to repay this money. And he looked at me for a second, and he sticks his hand out. He says, I'll tell you what, I've been in business for 30 years, and I've never, ever had anybody tell me to do this. If you stay sober, we'll call it even. And the only bad thing about the story is every time I see that man in a restaurant with a group of friends, I think you guys come on over here and tell them a story about it, right? But it seems in acts and things that we don't normally do, we do the opposite of what we normally do when we get here. We take direction. I'm the type of guy that's coming to me and I'll look you straight in the face and I'll never hear words you're saying. And if I'm doing that in the meeting, I'm doing it to the woman I'm with, I'm doing it to the job I'm with, I'm doing it to the county, because I got other things going on called stinking thinking. I'll tell you why on Tuesday to set you up a feel on Saturday, bro. Move a little bit ahead. I got answers to questions you'll never ask me, but I'm just waiting for you to ask me these questions, right? So I've learned that's the alcohol thinking, right? So I made amends, you know, and my life is getting well, you know. Things are changing for me, going to meetings. Ron taught me about meetings, meetings, meetings. One time you miss a meeting, Jeff, if you die on the way to one. And that stuff, that sticks in my head sometimes when I miss a couple meetings here and there. Because I watched these guys like a mom for 49 years, it's still on a Friday at 12 o'clock noon, it's alarm clock, still secretary of the meeting. I watched these old timers. I watched them in the successes and the failures, 3 steps forward, 2 steps backward. I learned about perfectionism. When I got here, I would walk into any room about Alcoholics Anonymous, scan the room, and look at every one of you, and tell you something bad about you without ever saying a word to you. By sticking around in this program today, I walk into rooms about Alcoholics Anonymous, and scan the room at every meeting, and I look at every one of you, and I can say something good about you. Sometimes I say a little prayer in the Bible language. But it doesn't come easy, man. Change doesn't come easy. It comes easy for me. Working the steps, working with other alcoholics, you know. So I got here on Social Security disability due to a car accident. We went head on with the semi. And I remember the first CHC got on the scene, and he says, "We got one possible fatality." And I'm thinking, damn, the truck driver died. And they're talking about me because I took the full impact. Everything was wrapped around me. If I could reach my hand out, I'd be able to touch the bathroom. So I spent the next year, about 3 months in a wheelchair. And do you think that changed any direction? No. People find me at the local nightclub, Chiquito's Club Paradise, First Avenue, drinking beer, popping cocaine, and popping pills and doing my other drugs, right? And I thought that's what life was about. Pour me another drink. I discovered these things about myself here. I discovered a lot of things about living life in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous with people such as yourself whose last name I'll probably never know. But I love these people. When I first got here, I didn't love anybody because I didn't love myself. I was very deeply broken. Ron used to tell me, "Jeff, you come in here and talk about recovery, we'll bring your family in and let them talk about how you really are. And I guarantee you it'll be 2 different things. And it took many years for that to start to become easy. Still to this day, I had a form of true relationship with a woman. After 3 years, I'm done. I'm good for 3 years. And that's just me, right? I'm 60 years old, I've never been married, so I got problems still in recovery. I can't put certain things together no matter what I try, counseling, the steps, whatever it may be. And I have to recognize those things. I have to be aware of my shortcomings here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I've had 4 sponsors since I've been here, and the second one called me. I've had it for 22 years. I had Mike Lowe for about a year, and I think I kind of sponsored him. And then the guy I got today, Tom is a very gentle and kind man. My 3 other sponsors, they were too kind and too gentle. But he came at the right time. It's like I said in many meetings, I didn't get here a minute too soon or a minute too late. I got here right on time. And as I stayed sober, I got here in God's time. And there's a window of opportunity for change. There's a window of opportunity for me to go through in order to get sober. Was I going to take it? All the right things came into place for me. Not as God's will that I learned later as I stayed in this program. That's God's will working itself out. If Jeff would still be out there, I'd be 1,600. And you know, Ron did things for me like helping me clean up my credit. He got me in action, had me write letters, told me what to do, boom, 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 did it. My first job in Alcoholics Anonymous was cleaning toilets. I cleaned the best damn toilet forever. was at that age, teaching me about pride and making a change and feeling okay with myself, you know, the struggle. And I had to go back in the resume in early sobriety. I had to go back and sit in my shift time to feel comfortable because I needed drama in my life. And my whole life was nothing but drama, drama, drama. One thing after another. The right haircut, the right set of jewelry, the right medium car, the right tennis shoes never worked. But Alcoholics Anonymous worked for me. And if it can work for me, it can probably work for you. I have to be honest, open-minded, and willingness, right? They teach us. And you know, Ron taught me, you know, about getting up every day, suiting up, going to make an Alcoholics Anonymous number one. AA comes over my kids, comes over everybody in my life, and comes over everything and everything. My life, AA's not my whole life anymore, but it's part of my whole life. And I gotta respect AA, just like I respect your people. That's what I was talking about, this program. It's simple, complicated people. You know? So, Ron and I, you know, before he chose to go out and have a drink, you know, he always encouraged me. And, I went back to school, and started getting an education. I became student body president in Fresno City College. And, when I got here, when I started learning how to express myself in meetings, some people ask me to keep coming back, and some ask me to never come back to me. Because I was dropping the F-bomb, you could suck it, I hate all you people, and I'd walk out the meeting and say hi to people and wonder why they wouldn't say hi to me. And I just didn't know, but all I wanted to do was stay sober, right? But I had a complicated mind. I couldn't let you too close to me. I got to keep you at arm's length. I couldn't be too vulnerable to you. I couldn't let you like me because I don't even like myself. People say, hey, we're all going to lunch, and I'd be like, well, am I invited? I don't even know why these people like me. That's where Bobby came in. I met Bobby when I was in the Deacon Center. He comes in, he's Mr. Volunteer of the Year at the VA hospital, looking all cute, everything with haircut, and the nurse says, oh, we got a live one over there in the corner. So he comes over, this is where our story's kind of changed, he's got a different version. So he comes over and says some stuff to me, and I guess my charming personality came out, and I said some stuff back, and so he leaves. And he's the only one that has the key to the linen closet, right? So we're in pajamas, and I'm in detox, and I asked the nurse, or I probably told the nurse I need some new pajamas. And she says, well, our volunteer just left, no one has a key, but he did leave some pajamas. I said, oh, that was nice of him. Yeah. So I go put on the pajamas, and they're extra small, right? So I'm walking around the VR with extra small pajamas, touching the sky out all weekend, thinking, you know, he's my new target, right? So then I get over the next week. I don't see him in the next week. And I go into the treatment shop for what? And I said, man, I'll never see that guy again. I don't like that mofo. I just don't like that, right? So it was right before Thanksgiving. So they take us to an outside meeting, and they got what's called the druggy buggy, and nobody gets in the front seat, so I go over there, hop in the front seat, I turn around and look, and he's sitting right there driving, Bobby. And I see, I can't get rid of this guy, right? Well, I can't get rid of this guy so much, I was his best man in his life. And that's what we do here, we form relationships. And we just don't know how it's going to turn out, just like life. But we give each other the best. Bobby loved me and took me to meetings. They would tell Bobby, you can come to meetings, but don't bring that guy Jeff. There's a lady in the president called Blind Patty, right, that started this meeting, and she had told Bobby, don't bring Jeff up. Don't bring that Jeff guy, right? So meetings, we're sitting in the back talking, and all of a sudden Blind Patty, looking around, is, Jeff, is that you? I told you, Bobby, not to bring him, right? So that's how I was when I got here. I was defiant. I did what I wanted to do. I never knew how to surrender. I never knew how to think outside the box for the whole picture. But AA taught me. AA's given me a peace of mind that I never knew that I had any stuff going on. You know, so about year four, folks, before I came to the Bible present, there was all the old timers hated me for some reason when I was pretty new, right? And so this old timer came in named Sylvia, and I hated her guts. And her and her husband, they both got 50 years now. And and she comes walking in, I'm like, oh man, not her again. And she says, if you have a goal or a dream, go after it. Don't set up a second best. And that morning, I told myself, I can't be student by the president, I'll just go for vice president because I'm not good enough. And just those words to somebody just sharing in general didn't know nothing about what I was going through. Changed my life that day. So I became student by the president, and then I wanted to start my own program working with kids. I was able to start a program working with kids. Long story short, I received an internship at year four. I just got celebrated year four. I was getting ready to celebrate year four. And I got an internship out of the White House. I worked out of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, which at that time was by the president said none of those drugs. So I got to go. I got to see how all the cartels were tracked. I got to go to meetings. And, you know, I still had a little bit of foul mouth. And I would go to these meetings. They were called shotgun meetings. And they would be at different locations every day. And it was around the White House. And one day this lady comes up to me. She says, you know what, Jeff, well, we really liked you in our meetings, but we never heard anybody talk to you. We were just wondering if you could not say that F word so much. And I was at that point where I was starting to listen to this. Yes. It was the right place at the right time. But see, the first day I get there, you know, I show up at the White House, and Secret Service comes out, and my mind's telling me, they just got to be arrested. The guy comes out, and he reflects the glass, and I introduce myself, and he says, hold on, let me get the other two come down, and start questioning me. I'm getting nervous, so they give me this badge, and they say, don't lose this badge. Whatever you do, don't lose the badge, you can go home. So, noon comes around, DuPont Circle is the closest to you to the White House, so I get a taxi, and get over there, get out of taxi, 7th edition comes around, I try to go pull out my wallet, and I lost my wallet. I mean, can't find my wallet, right? Shit, I leave this office with a, you know, my mind's going crazy, I look through the trash, and I run outside, and I think it's that cab company, no, it's that cab company, no. D.C. probably has 70, 80 different cab companies, right? So I'm confused. I'm hungry, lonely, and tired immediately, right? You know, I don't know what I'm going to do. These people send me home. Why go back? So I walk about 2.3 miles back to the White House. And I walk in, and the dude nods. I nod at him. He's like, where's your badge? I said, I lost it. Whoa. So they call, get on the phone, call, and two guys come down. I lost my dad, and when he's looking at me, he goes, are you ready to go home, man? I said, yeah. He said, just kidding, come on in. So come in. They give me a new bag. So I'm sitting there, you know, probably dumbfounded. It's 1 o'clock here, California time. I'm sitting at my desk, and my mom. She says, Jeffrey, did you lose your wallet today? I said, yeah. Something down here. She said, well, the cab driver called, and he said he's never seen nothing like this. He said, your wallet sat on his back seat after two fares came in, and nobody took your wallet. And he has your wallet, and he wants to give it back. And I took that as God talking to me that I'm doing the right thing. God may talk to you, my White House may be your relationship getting back together with the person that you love, getting the kids back, getting the job back, whatever it may be. So right before I left, you know, my boss said on the cabin, so we gotta go into different things, and he gave me these tickets to the Christmas tree lighting. And he said, go enjoy yourself, right? So it was right towards Christmas, obviously. So I'm walking over there. I didn't have any faith. I didn't really know anybody. And I'm walking. And, you know, the snow's starting to fall. You know, the moon's coming out. It's getting dark. I'm walking and they're stopping people and I got my badge out and I keep walking and I get right down for like a second roll. I'm sitting there and I'm sitting there thinking, you know, if that Catherine, I think it's Catherine Crosby or whatever it is, she comes out and sings that song, I'm gonna lose it. She comes out and she starts singing that song, man, I just break out crying. I'm crying and people are looking at me, are you okay? You wouldn't understand, you know, they're like trying to hug me. It was just a good thing, man. And Alcoholics Anonymous has gotten me to that point, right? Because of Alcoholics Anonymous, man. Yeah. For me to turn my back on Alcoholics Anonymous, I have to turn my back on people. Don't quit before the miracle happens, they say, and the miracle is still happening. Things are still happening in their lives, no matter how much time I got. Miracles are still happening as long as I'm coming in age. If I stay connected in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to stay connected with people, places, things, and situations. Acceptance is the answer to all my problems. When I'm disturbed, it's not a human being, man. And I've been a disturbed man for a long time, even in the program. I just got over a 3-year, I just got like I did, I just got over a 3-year black child, you know, the civil lawsuit. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was able to maintain and fight through it, surrender to it. I don't need to talk about it in a general way. Because when you get a little bit of time, you learn how to compartmentalize stuff. It's not a federal case anymore. It affected my life, and it affected kind of my job. But it taught me to look at the bigger picture, man. Stay focused on God, stay focused on my needs, be thankful and grateful for what I have. I'm thinking I'm going to lose everything I got. And when the final thing came in, it looked that way. You see, and then all of a sudden the miracle started kicking in. All of a sudden God started working, the miracle got lost, and I started working because I never lost my temper. I never said anything wrong about this person. I said some shit in my head, but I never said it to them or my child, right? And now some things are being erased. If I'd have went out and had a drink, I'd have just stuck around to get this black child listed number one. I'd have never been able to stand up here and thank God and let you people know that this program works no matter what. We just don't drink. It's a we program. There's two ways to work this program out right here. There's a hard way and an easy way. And the hard way is trying to work with the mom and the easy way, you know, that I can. And if my sponsor has my same first last name as me, I'm a little shit, right? You know what I mean? So that's why I get these things called sponsors that, you know, give us direction, give us love, and sometimes are very, very good. You know, like I say, AA doesn't need me, I need Alcoholics Anonymous. I like to feel blessed with a lot of good people. A lot of good people in these rooms, people that I love, that have helped me out, just the kind of love. You know, so for me, you know, while I'm on, and you know, the sponsor that I have today, Tom, he looks like a guy that's just so awesome. He looks a guy, always tan, got the Barney's on, the hair just perfect all the time. And I didn't like him either when I first met him. And so he was my sponsor. He's saying, you know, nice, kind, gentle things to me. And he gets me in this book called Rock the Rock. We start going through this Rock the Rock. And Big Ron, you know, when I get pushed out, those people would give me books and he'd tell me to throw them away. Don't listen to them. You listen to me. Don't listen to me. So that worked for a while. But the only thing that changes is everything, right? I have to have the ability to take direction. I have to be open-minded. To say, you know what, this isn't working. Maybe the way that they're doing it. You know, I see a lot of sponsors, you know, come to meetings nowadays and they talk all this trash. I tell my sponsor, if you're going to talk trash about me, let me be in the meeting first. You know, let me be there when you do it. You know what I mean? Because it happens. But I see a lot of this sponsor jumping, right? People want to fire the sponsors every other month because they're not doing what they think they should be doing. So, that's what we learn, to surrender. The strong don't survive. Powerless over people, places, and things. To try something different. To do the opposite of what I normally do in my life. What got me here, my best thinking got me here. And what I've learned from just witnessing a lot of things is easier shame sober than guilt sober. And I got to work just as hard as the man with one day. The man with one day can help the man with 30 years. The woman with 3 months can help the man help the woman with 13 years, right? That's how it works here, man. There's no bars at that door when we walk in saying, hey, you can't come in here. You're too rotten. Or, hey, you can't come in here. You're not rotten enough. We love and we accept people for whom what they are because that's what I needed when I got here. That's what you people talk. And what Tom taught me was probably the last 10 years up until about 2 years ago, I was resting on my Lord. I come to the street convenience, I sponsor guys, you need to ride home, I take you home, I just cut me out, I need my breath, but we never say no, right? Some of you need some of AA, and we do it, as long as not to hurt another individual. But there was just something missing, man, and we got into this book, and it taught me, not about you people, once again, it taught me about myself. I've been about a man with over 25, 26 years resting on his locals. That stinking thinking that someone talked about. If you're in a room by yourself, you're outnumbered, right? You can meet me conversations that go on. A lot of thinking here for you, for us. As long as we continue to stay open-minded and willingness, and willing to reach out the hand, then I got a shot at staying sober one day at a time. The man or woman that works this program one day at a time will outlast the man or woman that works it 2 weeks at a time, a month at a time, 2 days at a time. I got to take the next one to people. I may not look like you. I may not walk like you. I may not talk like you. But you put a drink in me, I act just like you guys do. Or you act just like me. You know, you see the newcomers come in and all of a sudden, you know, you guys starting to look good, getting a little color back in your face, wearing some nice clothes and all the people paying compliments. I always wonder, what's going on the inside? This is an inside job and the question is how you doing inside. And I am with this, you know. When I was drinking and using, I had a lot of ups and downs on the way down. And now that I quit drinking and using, I got a lot of ups and downs on the way. And I thank you people for allowing me to come out here, share my experience, strength, and hope. And please don't quit before the miracle happens. Thanks for letting me share.